the data point that is the best indicator of the viability of a case is last contact date. My best advice to any law firm that is looking to maximize the value of their case portfolio and reduce attrition is to stay in touch with the clients. That actually is a solution that helps them keep that client engaged, making sure that it doesn't become a dual rep situation. It's to contact them early in the process and then contact them often so that the client feels engaged and they're getting the experience that they need, especially if they've gone through something that is quite traumatic in their life.
Welcome to Trial Lawyer View, the podcast dedicated to the fierce yet compassionate lawyers who fight every day for justice in the courtroom. Our guests are top trial lawyers and their firms who share their stories and experiences, offering valuable insights into their journey, as well as expert guests who provide actionable strategies and practical tips for personal injury lawyers looking to optimize their operations, enhance client service, and drive growth in their practices. Trial Lawyer View is brought to you by Synergy. At Synergy, we aren't just a service provider. We are a strategic partner for personal injury law firms, seamlessly integrating with law firms to boost efficiency from day one. Outsourcing cumbersome administrative tasks like lien resolution and Medicare compliance to an expert partner like Synergy enables personal injury firms to focus on what they do best.
Welcome to another episode of Trial Lawyer View, where I'm joined by Dan Miner. Dan is the CEO of Caseworks, a leading player in the litigation support services space with an emphasis on mass torts. With over 20 years of experience across the legal, tech, and product sector, Dan has become known for his expertise in operational leadership, finance, and management consulting. His career has spanned roles at the top of companies like Red Ventures, Bankrate, Accenture, and Deloitte, where he led large teams to develop innovative technology solutions that processed hundreds of thousands of transactions with zero margin for error. As the CEO of Caseworks, Dan is at the forefront of transforming the way law firms manage mass torts and single event cases with a focus on driving efficiency and delivering high-value outcomes. From improving medical record retrieval processes to innovative tools for case management and development, Dan is actively shaping the future of legal operations. Today, we explore the changing landscape of mass torts, why innovations in the legal tech space are more important than ever in single event and mass tort, and the impact of Arizona ABS structure on law firms. This episode provides valuable insights on how firms can optimize their operations and scale effectively in a rapidly evolving industry. Dan, welcome to Trial Lawyer View, and thank you for being with me today on the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
I want to start off with asking you a bit about Caseworks, because I know all about what you guys do, but our audience and listeners don't. So could you talk a little bit about what Caseworks does and how it's relevant to a lawyer's practice who may be listening to the podcast?
Sure. So Caseworks, in its simplest form, is a case development company. We'll start with a assigned client, someone who is signed with a law firm, and our goal is to validate that case. And so we're going to do that in several different ways. We're going to communicate with the client, ask them a series of questions, kind of confirm some of the details that might have been captured during the intake process. We'll then request medical records. Medical records are the core to validating mass tort cases, as well as single event cases. So we'll request the medical records first through kind of the electronic health record networks. Then we'll actually go to the facilities themselves if we're unable to get the information we're looking for. Then all this data comes back from a medical record standpoint. We'll have to review it. So we review that first with AI, and then we utilize our nursing staff, which is kind of the core of Caseworks, to validate the findings that the AI came back with. We'll then capture all that information, populate things that is needed in the court. So it could be a plaintiff fact sheet, a plaintiff profile form, a census form, but whatever the court dictates. And what we're trying to do is create something that gives both the plaintiff law firm a perspective of I have a valid case, as well as the defense law firm, the idea of what is a valid case in this litigation. And that's kind of our core from a case development standpoint. On the bookends, though, we'll also do what we refer to as client engagement. So at the beginning, someone's been injured, they see an advertisement on television, we can be the contact center team that's picking up that phone call or that's reaching out to that client and asking them a series of questions to confirm that they are indeed qualified for this litigation. And on the other side, we'll hopefully talk about this a little bit more detail, but fallout's a huge problem. So we stay in touch with the client to ensure that one, they're going to be there when the case resolves and they can sign the settlement documentation, but also this is a challenging process. And so we want to stay in touch with that client and give them a great client experience so that they are excited with the end result for both the plaintiff side as well as the defense side.
So you just talked about how Casework and your team has developed a range of services that streamline the operations of a law firm when they're handling mass tort cases and how that plays into the intake process. And you talked about medical record retrieval. Can you explain how that and the review services helps a firm operate more efficiently and effectively when they're handling a large scale mass tort?
Yeah, I mean, medical records are the core of mass tort as well as single event. And, you know, the law firm, sometimes they'll bring that capability in-house. Sometimes they'll contract with a third party to go and obtain those medical records. But the challenge is that when you request from the facilities, they're asking for very specific information, usually in a time frame. And what we often refer to is the chase and rejections come through. So a rejection comes back from the facility. They say, we've never heard of this plaintiff. It could have been due to a name change, could have been due to getting the time period wrong, could have been due to asking for some very specific information, which was actually with a different facility. And so you then have to go back to the client. You then ask them a series of questions. Are you sure you went to that doctor? Are you sure you went to that hospital? Are you sure that it was this year or this time frame? And then reorder those medical records. And so it can become a difficult process for these law firms because they're constantly chasing both the facilities as well as the clients to get the information that they need. And so we try to simplify that. We first go out and cascade the health networks to pull in whatever records are accessible. And so there's been a ton of innovation in the health records space. I'll use my son as an example. So he's a patient at many hospitals. And when he was first born, you'd have to ask the hospital to give us a set of the records. We would take that to a physician in another hospital. The hospital may actually then ask for some follow-up records. Today, when he goes to any hospital, they see every visit he's had with all the other hospitals. And that's due to some of the innovation and interoperability with the health networks. And so if we can scan those networks, pull in information, we can then help the law firms decide whether or not they have a case that is going to be valid at the time of case resolution. And then we may have to go get additional records. And so they can be both the starting point to get the information that gives us the traditional records, or they can be the actual set of records that are used to resolve that litigation.
So if a mass tort firm struggles with the complexity of managing the records and all the forms that are necessary in a mass tort case, how do you guys come in and help manage that process? What are you doing to support the firm to avoid errors and optimizing the case development process?
Yeah, I mean, well, first, we want to make it simple for them. They're constantly having to send out HIPAA requests. They're sending out requests to the facilities for these records. So we want to simplify that. We'll get a standard HIPAA. We'll ask them to either use that when they sign the case, or we'll reach out to the clients and get that HIPAA signed so that we can utilize it when we request the records. We will then go pull the records and we will drop them either in a location that's accessible to the law firm so that they can assign it to their cases, or we'll integrate directly with the law firm and share those records back to the corresponding claimant in their case management system. And so that saves a ton of time. They don't have to chase records. They don't have to worry about, did I get the right records? And they also don't have to manage where those records get added in their case management system. So they cut out some of those people costs that are really just chasing. So they can focus on the things that matter most in the litigation, which is to try to get these cases resolved rather than chasing down documentation.
So, you know, the HIPAA thing is an important thing for us too. When we're getting started with the lien resolution process, we need that as well. Are you guys leveraging any types of technology that allows for electronic signature, or is that typically the firm that's managing that process with the HIPAA in particular?
Yeah, when we assist the law firms in capturing those HIPAAs, we'll grab both e-signature as well as a wet signature if we're able to get one from the client. Many of the facilities will still request a wet signature, but we've seen great success with e-signature, especially post-COVID. COVID, a lot of things were shut down, so getting a wet signature wasn't really the requirement. E-signature has become more and more acceptable by many of these facilities, but we're still trying to get that wet signature because there's still facilities that will require the wet signature. But we'll help the law firms kind of track that down. We may also want to get things like a driver's license or a copy of that driver's license so that the facility knows that that was indeed the patient. Sometimes you get a change of name as well as a change of address. And so we're going to try to get whatever information we can to supplement when we request those records. And then finally, one of the things that we're doing at the very beginning of that medical record retrieval process is we're doing an identity validation. So we're capturing their last set of addresses. We're confirming kind of where they've lived so that we can ensure that we're getting the records from the right facilities. And we're setting kind of radiuses around the corresponding addresses that they've lived in to actually pull records from all of those potential facilities as well.
Kind of nice segue into the next question I was going to ask you, which was about leveraging technology to ultimately, you know, improve efficiency for the law firms that are handling mass tort and single event. Can you talk about some examples of tools or processes that you guys employ that make a measurable difference for the law firm in terms of the outcomes that they see by utilizing CaseWorks?
Yeah, just to close that medical records topic, you know, even that tool of kind of cascading these electronic health networks, what we found is that law firms will come to us, they say, we know these are compensable cases. There was a law firm we were working with that gave us several cases and said, we know that these cases meet the criteria for the litigation. We've spoken to the clients many times over. We want to make sure that we get something that both the defense as well as us can agree on. And so can you assist us? We've been struggling to get medical records. We scanned the networks. We pulled back medical records for about 50% of the records that were returned. It was sufficient, gave them all the information they needed. For the other 50%, they were able to get that next step. They found out that they had the date wrong, or they had the facility wrong, or they had the doctor wrong. And so they could then go request the records that they needed because they were able to pull that information out just with visit history and other information that came from those scans. And so just that technology, instead of kind of doing that chase, getting that first upfront pull gives them visibility into what's actually there. And it allowed them to resolve many of those cases in an efficient way. Then when those records come back, these records can have thousands of pages of documentation. And so one of the big buzzwords in the legal space right now is AI. The use of AI can be used in workflows. It can be used in review. It can be used in document generation. And so where we deploy AI is really in a few different capacities. The first is in electronic medical record review. We want to review those records first with AI so that we can get the right resource on the next step. And so if we find things that indicate the injury or indicate treatment, then we want to put a nurse on that to review. If we don't find things that indicate the injury or indicate treatment, we don't want to have a nurse spend their time reviewing a document that likely doesn't actually support that litigation. And so instead, we're going to send it to the right resource who can then go get the next wave of records or contact the client and confirm. And so we're using AI to automate as much as we can and drive efficiency. And what that does for us is we can process about 10 times as many records with the nursing staff that we have today. We would have had to hire substantially more resources. Nurses still very much involved because you have to have that human element. But at the same time, we're driving substantial efficiency, which ultimately benefits the law firms because they can resolve more cases. They can move these cases through the process faster. And that benefits both plaintiff as well as defense firms. And then finally, it's workflow. Many law firms, you know, they've started to establish processes and protocols with their systems. We do the same thing. We deploy an assembly line to manage these cases. And so as I was indicating, we want to make sure we get the right resources working on that next activity. And we're going to do exactly that to confirm that these are indeed valid cases per the criteria of the TOR. Our goal is to try to create speed and efficiency that again, works for both the defense as well as the plaintiff side.
And since we're talking about technology, how do you see technology that's being developed in the AI realm impacting all the things that you just talked about in terms of speed and also, you know, avoiding errors in the evaluation process or ferreting out cases, maybe that shouldn't be part of the claims.
There's been a ton of fraud, whether it's class action, mass tort, single event. Fraud is pretty prominent. When you have advertisements that are on television that are enticing a prospective plaintiff to make a phone call, potentially lie about injuries, you want to be able to resolve those fast. And so fraud becomes a huge problem in all of the various civil litigation service areas. And AI solves for that. There are AI tools as well as databases and technology solutions that we bring into our process to identify potential fraud. And then we'll actually go resolve that, usually with a human element, to either close out that case or to see if there's a different way to proceed. Law firms are starting to do this as well. They're starting to segment their cases and identify, you know, which cases may potentially be fraud, and can we put some responsibility back on the plaintiff to give some information to us or to give us some additional supporting documentation that substantiates their case. And so that's just one example of how technology and AI is solving it. I think on the other side, we're starting to see document population as well. This is something that there are several vendors that are playing in this space for demand package generation or automated demand letters that get created based on the specifics of the case. And I always view it as those are great technology solutions, but they're a starting point. You still want to have your paralegal or your own legal staff take a look at that. And so we try to do the same thing. We supplement technology to drive substantial efficiency, but at the same time, we have a paralegal or an administrator take a look at the results to confirm that we do indeed still have that valid case.
Yeah, critical. And we had a webinar fairly recently where Bob Simon was talking about, you know, the ethical responsibilities of lawyers in terms of using AI and making sure that, you know, ultimately the work product is the right work product. So your point is a really important one in terms of how, you know, you've got to make sure ultimately that you are not relying upon AI. It's an augment. It's a, you know, enhancement. It is certainly not something that, at least today, I mean, we'll have to see where this all goes, because as fast as it is developing, it's pretty hard to really tell where it's going to end. But it's interesting how it's already being utilized and accelerating the process, which is important, because the sooner these things get resolved, the sooner the injured party can get compensated.
That's right. The use of AI started on the plaintiff side. Makes sense. These are contingent fee lawyers. They want to reduce their corresponding costs because, you know, they don't know what the end result will be. And so trying to keep the cost as low as possible. But there are several applications on both the plaintiff and defense side, especially as we start to think about how can we resolve these cases in a more timely manner? How can we drive efficiency of the administration process? And how do we make something that works for both parties, the defense as well as the plaintiff?
So I know personally, just from my own involvement in the mass tort world, that there's, you know, a lot of evolution that goes on, particularly in processes and how these things are resolved. And I'm curious, though, if there's some key trends that you are seeing in the mass tort space and how you think the landscape may change in the next 3 years, because probably going any further out than 3 years, it's really speculative.
Yeah, I think if you go back 3 or 4 years, it was probably a little bit of the wild, wild west when it came to funding. There was a lot of funding that started to come into the space. I think the rigor was pretty weak in terms of the diligence that was done on some of the cases, the torts in general. We're seeing that kind of pendulum swing the other way. The litigation funders are putting a ton of rigor into their evaluation of potential MDLs, into their evaluation of collateral. We're seeing requests from litigation funders every month asking us, hey, can you help us with this collateral examination to ensure that they do indeed have the asset value that they think is out there. And so much more rigor being put in. That's a trend that I think kind of came out of the Camp Lejeune side, but something I think we're going to continue to see. I think another trend is the vendor rigor. As we already talked about, there's a ton of fraud, and the fraud doesn't just exist on the plaintiff side with plaintiffs, you know, trying to sign up for cases that they're not qualified for. It also exists on the vendor side. The vendors might be signing cases that aren't legitimately qualified. There's some supply and demand imbalance the last few years. A ton of money came into the space, but the number of cases that were out there just didn't match match the corresponding demand. And so many of these vendors were using third parties that they've never worked with before. New entrants into the space, those new entrants, unfortunately, not proven. And many of them had some unscrupulous practices. And so we started to see cases get signed that were either fake, not even valid human beings or valid individuals, potentially fake medical records, and substantial fraud that was taking place where these cases were being generated with very little merit. I think you're starting to see much more vendor diligence and vendor rigor as well. That's a trend that we've seen over the course of the last kind of 2 years or so, where the law firms are starting to put much more diligence into their vendors. They only want to work with the vendors that are going to get the best quality output, and they care a lot about their brand, which is something that very much matters to these plaintiff side law firms as they think about the long-term view. And then I think the last thing that's a bit of a trend is the Arizona ABS structure. The Arizona ABS structure has invited many new entrants into the space. For those not familiar, the Arizona Ethics Rule 5.4, with that rule essentially no longer in play, the Arizona bar is enabling non-lawyer ownerships in law firms. And so that is a changing dynamic. You're seeing many of the financial players create their own law firms in the state of Arizona. And as a result, who is generating the cases, the law firms that are actually responsible for kind of acquiring these cases on the plaintiff side, is changing. The leadership is still in play. Many of the incumbent leaders are still settling and resolving cases, but they may not be the ones that are actually generating now. They may be working with these third-party kind of hedge fund slash litigation funder-based law firms to actually generate and acquire those cases. I do think we're going to see some change in that. Arizona, I think, has seen that the goal of that was to create access to justice for the citizens of Arizona. And I think when you think of the investment that's occurred, many of these cases are outside of the state of Arizona. And so you're going to start to see a little bit of that pendulum swing with probably a little bit more rigor. But it's a trend that I think will continue over the course of the next 3 to 5 years, where more states will start to adopt similar structures.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you about that. I mean, it's interesting to me, being a lawyer, the idea of your decision-making being influenced by factors other than what typically a lawyer might rely upon in making decisions because of that outside influence. It seems like that there are some real risks, particularly in the mass tort world, because if you're looking at profit over end result to the injured party, that could very well be a problem ethically for a lot of lawyers. And, so to me, there's some really interesting parts of that. I personally believe that you're accurate, that it is going to be something that more states adopt. We had DC, did it a long time ago. But it also does beg the question of how does that impact a lawyer's ability to make decisions that the lawyer needs to make in the way that they need to be made?
I think the model that I'm starting to see more and more of is that the firms that are acquiring the cases, they still have to partner with prominent settlement firms that can work with defense and get these cases resolved or settled. They're not actually taking out these cases and trying to litigate them themselves, at least not yet. And I think that's a model that will create the checks and balances where that settlement firm says, here's what I need to do to resolve these cases. Of course, the dynamics are going to be somewhat interesting is if the bulk of the acquisition is coming from litigation funding dollars, whether that's, debt or equity or a law firm that they have spun up, then, they are potentially directing which torts the industry starts to invest in. And so you start to lose some of that creativity. With that said, we haven't seen that. We're seeing many new MDLs and kind of litigations pop up. And while the litigation funders may have some skepticism in many of them, as I talked about that kind of rigor that they're starting to put into the case analysis, I think what we're seeing is that many of the firms are still entering these cases that are relatively new. And so you still see that balance. There will be firms that are going to be straight acquisition firms. There are going to be firms that will be straight settlement firms. And then, the Arizona structure provides kind of the routine case volume that comes through that maybe not be that early stage, but is going to be the bulk of the cases that we see in mass tort.
So that
a good segue into the next question, because I'm curious how any of that impacts your white paper maximizing mass tort ROI, because that discusses attrition rates as a significant challenge in the space. So one, I'm curious if that's being driven somewhat, the attrition, by more dollars flowing in and many more people flocking into that mass tort that then fall out because they just simply weren't and shouldn't have been in the case, or if it's a issue with truly, you know, how can the law firm reduce fallout and make sure that their conversion rates are good from signed retainer to a compensable case that's part of the mass tort?
I think there are several things that factor into that. And in our white paper, we talk about, you know, attrition is on the rise. And it's a few points every year where it goes up. But part of that is due to the fraud that took place in the industry. When this capital comes in, especially with a tort like Camp Lejeune, where it's known defendant being the U.S. government, where the injuries are fairly well defined, where the science is quite clear, it becomes something that is very interesting to litigation funding community. And so there was a lot of investment that came into specifically that tort. And that drove a ton of dual representation issues, cases that were signed by multiple law firms clients who signed with multiple law firms, to be more precise. And you know, that became a substantial problem where you're going to have attrition as a result. You know, only one law firm can actually have that case for resolution. I think the other thing is we got a lot of fraudulent signs. There were cases that just didn't meet the criteria. There were people who unfortunately lied. And that was on the rise because of that supply and demand kind of imbalance that I had mentioned earlier. I think one of the things that we're seeing more and more of, though, is rigor at the front end. And so rigor in terms of who are the vendors that we want to work with. You know, what are their conversion rates? What have they seen in the past? How have they performed on other torts? Which law firms are they working with? And are they reputable? We're starting to see more and more of those questions about the vendor landscape. Many of those fly-by-the-night marketing companies don't exist today. And I think some of that is due to the law firms putting more rigor into it. I think some of that is due to the fact that they got their cash and they exited. And so it should be a lesson learned to many of the law firms so that they don't make that same mistake again. The other problem that we see is many of the law firms, they would acquire or generate these cases and then they would sit on them.
Dan, you guys have a white paper article that's entitled Maximizing Your Mass Tort ROI, which talks about attrition rates as a significant challenge in the mass tort space. What do you believe are the most effective strategies law firms can implement to reduce fallout and ultimately ensure better conversion rates from signed retainer to compensable cases?
Well, I was chatting with a litigation funder earlier this week, and the litigation funder actually said that the data point that is the best indicator of the viability of a case is last contact date. And so my best advice to any law firm that is looking to maximize the value of their case portfolio and reduce attrition is to stay in touch with the clients. That actually is a solution that helps them keep that client engaged, making sure that it doesn't become a dual rep situation. It's to contact them early in the process and then contact them often so that the client feels engaged and they're getting the experience that they need, especially they've gone through something that is quite traumatic in their life. The other side too is it starts to give a sense of, is this a viable case, so that it can be a validated case and it can be taken to the other side for defense to confirm as well, rather than have something that neither party really knows if it's valid or not. It could potentially even be a fraudulent case. And so speak with the client very early on in the process, speak with them often, minimize that dual representation risk, and also create a great experience for the client themselves.
So have you seen any technologies being deployed that help with that contact and making sure the clients are being kept in the loop in terms of what's going on?
So you're seeing AI capabilities being deployed in every sector. In legal, we're seeing very specific use cases that apply to contact, whether it's auto contact, where it's messages that are just automatically generated every 30 days, whether it's voicemail drops that get dropped on someone's phone so that they can listen to a message from their attorney or their law firm. Some of the strategies that we employ, including regular text, email, phone call, and then voicemail drops. We also will employ a town hall event where we will take a town hall type environment, have a set of questions that the law firm themselves can answer. First time that this is done, it might be 100 participants. By the time it gets closer to settlement, it could be as many as several thousand participants. And it's a way to keep those clients engaged and also give them the information that they're looking for. You're seeing a ton of automated video as well in this space, where videos can be generated to provide updates on what's going on in the litigation. And then also make it appear as though it's something that's personalized and customized to the clients themselves.
So CaseWorks can help with a mass tort firm's need to communicate by outsourcing some of that to you guys.
That's right. And so we will be the ones that can pick up the phone to answer questions that the prospective plaintiffs may have. We are the ones who will stay in touch with the clients. We can deploy web technology type solutions as well as mobile technology type solutions. We have an app that allows the clients to share information, which ultimately helps get these cases to a resolved state. That information could be documentation that's needed in the settlement stages. That information could be a change of address if they've moved or their contact information has changed. And all of that ultimately helps get to that resolved state. And then, as I said, we'll stay in touch with the clients every 30 days, email, phone call, voicemail, text message, but ways to keep them engaged and also share a status on what's going on in the litigation.
So one of the other things in the white paper that I noticed in doing prep for the podcast was the discussion about a shift towards evaluating cost per compensable case versus cost per signed retainer in terms of ROI. Can you elaborate on why that shift is crucial for mass tort law firms to better assess true ROI?
Yeah. And so when we start to think of, the amount of capital that's been deployed in this space, litigation funders are deploying capital. The Arizona law firm structure has brought new mechanisms for deploying capital to the space. But a ton of funds being deployed to the space to generate new cases. And everyone wants to bring those cases into the fold and ultimately get them to a resolved state. But with all that incremental capital, there's fraudulent cases, there's fraudulent plaintiffs, folks who lie. And you want to be able to understand not just what is the cost to acquire or generate that case, because there are several low-cost providers, several new entrants who will undercut the market, but also the cost to truly get that case resolved. Like, what is the cost per each case that ultimately lands in resolution? And the plaintiff's law firms are going to think of that as their true cost per settled case or their cost per resolved case. But the defense has the same mindset. The defense doesn't want to work through 300,000 cases only for 100,000 of them to be resolved. That's an incremental cost for them as well. And so if we can get the junk out of the system very early on in the process, we can get to that truly cost per validated case or cost per compensable case on the plaintiff's side. It's a better metric. Getting visibility very, very early in the process allows you to get a sense of what is my cost per validated case. And then the plaintiff law firm can change their criteria, can change the target audience, can change the channels, can change even their vendor partners that they're working with, because it becomes a feedback loop back into that process. And then same thing, if we can get the insight into these cases very, very early on, we can actually weed that junk out. It saves quite a bit of capital and quite a bit of spend on the defense side as well.
I'm curious about your thoughts on how that may impact the future of law firms, particularly those in high stakes mass tort and complex litigation. There's DC that's had this type of thing in Arizona now. And some other states considering it. What do you think is the future of all this? And will more states follow suit with Arizona? What does that translate into ultimately?
the Arizona structure has created a entry point for non-lawyers. We've seen it with financial services institutions creating Arizona law firms. We've seen it with established attorneys creating a new law firm in Arizona and then bringing in third-party capital to work with them. But what it's done is it's created an avenue to deploy capital, not only in mass tort, but in all elements of legal. It could be in other civil litigation service areas, such as single event, personal injury, mass tort. Could also be in, you know, the traditional services, could be tax services. And we start to see some of the professional services firms kind of trying to enter into the Arizona market. But what it means is the intent was to create a structure that enables access to legal services and access to justice for the citizens of Arizona. We're seeing it being applied on a broader scale. My view is we're going to start to see that in other jurisdictions or other states over the coming, you know, 5, 6, 10 years. And it is a model that's probably here to stay. I do think it will go through some reform over time, as with any structure that is relatively new. It will go through some reform over time, but the model is enabling this capital to be deployed and ultimately to provide access to those legal services. And then the final thing is, like, what does this actually mean for law firm structures? Many of these new firms that are now generating cases in Arizona, they're partnering with some of the leading firms in mass tort and single event to get these cases resolved in their corresponding jurisdictions. And so although the intent was to create access to legal services and justice for the citizens of Arizona, it's expanded well beyond that. And I think that's something that you'll start to see each of the states take into consideration as these programs evolve in the future.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how this ultimately plays out. But the infusion of dollars into the space that has come through that structure is definitely a pretty seismic shift in the business landscape of law, particularly, you know, in the mass tort space. And you've hit upon something that really is something to watch. And had other guests who have talked about this as, you know, what does the future look like and how does that impact, and particularly in the mass tort space, I think that there is going to be continued impact of that. And part of the things that you've highlighted in terms of really understanding that marketplace is helpful for lawyers who are, you know, interested in this space, and ultimately those that are also already players in the space. But I wanted to transition and talk a little bit as we're coming to the end of the podcast about single event cases, which, you know, is of great interest to me because that's our primary area that we operate in, although we do handle project work and mass tort work as well. But I'm curious about some of the technologies and solutions that you guys have to offer that are transforming that front end case workup and how that can improve law firm operations. Because I know that's part of what we do is on the lien identification and verification process is making the law firm better at that initial stage of case workup. But what do you see as ways to help improve law firm operations with the services that you guys can provide?
So first, just on the single event space, we have started to see this overlap in what I'll call the traditional siloed lanes in civil litigation service areas, but this overlap where there's a little bit of a blurring of mass tort and single event. And so that has enabled us to develop additional services that can support single event firms. Whether we look at things like the sexual abuse cases and how that can be, you know, somewhat similar to a single event case, or even a medical malpractice case that aligns with several of the other, you know, mass tort types where we see medical mass tort or medical malpractice come out of mass tort cases. And so we're seeing this overlap, and it's allowed us to develop some tools and technologies to service those types of cases as well. The first is in legal intake. You know, we can provide services to qualify and vet a client. We know that there's substantial fraud in the space. And so it's fraud detection up front to save substantial cost on the downstream side, making making sure that you're only working on truly valid cases or prospective plaintiffs. Then as we start to get into the record retrieval, it's retrieving records to substantiate the case. It's retrieving not only the medical records, but also retrieving, you know, whether it be police reports or other supporting documentation to support a case. And then finally, it's building that entire kind of profile of the case and being able to create a corresponding demand package to resolve that case. Now, what we've learned in this process is that even in today's world, where we're trying to drive efficiency and automation all throughout, the beginning often doesn't talk to the end. So we want to capture as much information as we can at the beginning of the process that ultimately supports each step in the process. And so if we have medical records and we're understanding the corresponding charges, we want to pass that to you so that you're able to then have a more efficient lien resolution process as well. Same type of thing in very early on in the process. If someone has filed for personal bankruptcy, we want to be able to capture those things early on in the process to make a much smoother resolution later on downstream. And so those are things that we've started to deploy in our own processes, but do that with in an efficient manner as well.
Yeah, the technology that's developing around all of this is pretty amazing, but also it's amazing to see how analog it's been for such a long time and still, you know, slower adoption of some of the technologies that can really, and services that can really transform a law firm's profitability because it impacts, you know, labor costs, it impacts, you know, error rate, it impacts, you know, being able to deliver a better customer experience for the person that's been injured. I mean, all those things that these services can really assist with are things that improve the business for the personal injury law firm, which, you know, I think is going to see the adoption ultimately as law firms really focus on delivering for the injured party and what that looks like, their customer, that these sorts of things are going to become very much adopted versus cutting edge, which they are today.
One of the pieces of advice that I would always give a law firm is, with all this change, new AI technologies, new processes, new potential vendor partners, new structures with Arizona, potential co-counsel arrangements, all this complexity with all the changes that are going on, it's to put some diligence in and truly vet your partners to make sure that you have a solution that works end to end and solves for some of this chaos. So you can kind of get an elegant solution out of the chaos that has kind of existed in the last decade or so.
That's key, is making sure that you're with partners that have been in this game a long time and understand the space, understand personal injury law firms and how they operate and what the pain points are and are, you know, set up to help and deliver on that. And, you know, have the deep teams that have the resources to really make sure ultimately that they're improving the law firm operationally or, to, you know, improving results, because that's really what matters ultimately at the end of the day for any business, is having vendors and partners that can deliver on that, which I know that that's, you know, our focus. From what I've done my due diligence around you guys and having known, you know, the kind of what you guys do, I know that that's the focus. So the last question, and I always ask this of guests, and very open-ended, so I'll leave it to you to decide how to answer it. But wanted to ask you, what's your view as the CEO of a company that is very much ingrained in the mass tort space and also in the single event space, in terms of how you view this space or whatever you want to talk about? If we haven't covered something already, feel free. The platform's yours.
I'll give you kind of my, what is the future? What does the future hold for us, and where will we go? And my vision of like the perfect case is that there's a defendant that unfortunately someone has been injured, or a pool of participants have been injured, or several plaintiffs have been injured. And those cases can be acquired. Those cases can then be vetted. There is an intermediate third party that can pass information between both plaintiff and defense to drive at a reduced cost outcome. Both parties see a completely vetted case, and they can then resolve and get that case resolved in a very timely manner. Because that person who's been injured, we want to make sure that they're getting compensated and they can move on with their life in a timely way. We want to minimize the cost to the defense firm, and we want to create the best outcomes we can for those who truly have been injured. Get the fraud out of the process and truly make it a great experience for those who have been involved. And so that's my version of like what we're trying to create. And I think with the right players in the space, we can do exactly that.
Dan, if anyone's listening to the podcast and has questions about how CaseWorks can help their practices or are in need of the services that you guys can offer, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Best way is you can contact us on our website. There's a form that comes right to our team who will contact pretty quickly thereafter and talk through anything, whether it's requesting our white paper, whether it's requesting some support for potential services, or whether it's just to understand a little bit about the space. And then also our contact information is available on our website. So if you want to send me an email directly, I'd be very open to that as well.
Great. Well, and we'll include in the show notes the contact information, and hopefully ultimately we've helped some of our listeners understand better how CaseWorks can deliver for them in the ways that you've talked about today. And thank you everybody for tuning into another episode of Trial Lawyer View, and we'll see everybody on the next episode.
Here is another episode of Trial Lawyer View. We hope you enjoy today's guest and discussion. Tune in to our next episode for more helpful insights from fellow trial lawyers and practice experts. This podcast is brought to you by Synergy. Visit partnerwithsynergy.com to learn more about how Synergy can free your firm to focus on what it does best.